Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 31st, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till 11 p.m. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we want to pick up where we left off last week on a scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of Luke. This week we'll be reading chapter 20. So the Gospel of Luke, chapter 20, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 20. And it came to pass that on one of those days, as he taught the people in the temple and preached the gospel, the chief priests and the scribes came upon him with the elders, and spake unto him, saying, Tell us, by what authority doest thou these things? Or who is he that gave thee this authority? And he answered and said unto them, I will also ask you one thing, and answer me. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or of men? And they reasoned with themselves, saying, If we shall say from heaven, he will say, Why then believed ye him not? But and if we say of men, all the people will stone us, for they be persuaded that John was a prophet. And they answered that they could not tell whence it was. And Jesus said unto them, Neither tell I you by what authority I do these things. Then began he to speak to the people this parable. A certain man planted a vineyard, and let it forth to husbandmen, and went into a far country for a long time. And at the season he sent a servant to the husbandmen, that they should give him of the fruit of the vineyard. But the husbandmen beat him, and sent him away empty. And again he sent another servant, and they beat him also, and entreated him shamefully, and sent him away empty. And again he sent a third, and they wounded him also, and cast him out. Then said the Lord of the vineyard, What shall I do? I will send my beloved son. It may be they will reverence him when they see him. But when the husbandmen saw him, they reasoned among themselves, saying, This is the heir. Come, let us kill him, that the inheritance may be ours. So they cast him out of the vineyard and killed him. What therefore shall the Lord of the vineyard do unto them? He shall come and destroy these husbandmen, and shall give the vineyard to others. And when they heard it, they said, God forbid. And he beheld them and said, What is this then that is written? The stone which the builders rejected, the same is become the head of the corner. Whosoever shall fall upon that stone shall be broken. But on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. And the chief priests and the scribes the same hour sought to lay hands on him, and they feared the people, for they perceived that he had spoken this parable against them. And they watched him, and sent forth spies, which should feign themselves just men, that they might take hold of his words, that so they might deliver him unto the power and authority of the governor. And they asked him, saying, Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly, neither acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. Is it lawful for us to give tribute unto Caesar, or no? But he perceived their craftiness, and said unto them, Why tempt ye me? Show me a penny. Whose image and superscription hath it? They answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, Render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's. And they could not take hold of his words before the people, and they marveled at his answer, and held their peace. Then came to him certain of the Sadducees, which deny that there is any resurrection, and they asked him, saying, Master, Moses wrote unto us, If any man's brother die, having a wife, and he die without children, that his brother should take his wife, and raise up seed unto his brother. There were therefore seven brethren, and the first took a wife, and died without children. And the second took her to wife, and he died childless. And the third took her, and in like manner the seven also. And they left no children, and died. Last of all, the woman died also. Therefore, in the resurrection, whose wife of them is she? For seven had her to wife. And Jesus answering said unto them, The children of this world marry and are given in marriage. But they which shall be accounted worthy to obtain that world and the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. Neither can they die any more, for they are equal unto the angels, and are the children of God, being the children of the resurrection. Now that the dead are raised, even Moses showed at the bush, when he called the Lord the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. For he is not a God of the dead, but of the living. For all live unto him. Then certain of the scribes answering said, Master, thou hast well said. And after that they durst not ask him any question at all. And he said unto them, How say they that Christ is David's son? And David himself saith in the book of Psalms, The Lord said unto my Lord, Sit thou on my right hand, till I make thine enemies thy footstool. David therefore calleth him Lord. How is he then his son? Then in the audience of all the people he said unto his disciples, Beware of the scribes, which desire to walk in long robes, and love greetings in the markets, and the highest seats in the synagogues, and the chief rooms at feasts, which devour widows' houses, and for a show make long prayers. The same shall receive greater damnation.
Okay, Terry or Jan, do we have any questions tonight?
Can you? Yeah, Jan has them. Yes, we do have
okay.
questions. Jan?
Yeah, his mic is off, Jan. Maybe he's talking. Let me see if I can unmute him. Jan, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you now. You were muted.
I lost the panel here. I have a comment I'd like to make, and then we have about four questions as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can find them. There's a group that's auditing the 2020 election here in Pennsylvania. It's called Audit the Vote PA, and they've gone over 20 counties so far over the last 8 months. They put out a report this week on Lancaster County, which has a population of about 550,000. It's kind of halfway between Philadelphia and Harrisburg. They knocked on 411 doors, and they got 256 surveys collected. Now, of those, 37% of houses had some election anomaly occur, 1 in 3. 30% have some registration count discrepancy. 21% have phantom registrations associated with their addresses, 1 out of 5. 9% have less registrations on record than the residents stated. 26% of the addresses had different numbers of votes on record for 2020 than the resident stated. 17% had phantom votes, and 9% were missing votes. And you wonder how on earth they ever came to a reasonable tally out of all that to report. They're working on the other 19 counties within the next 2 to 4 weeks. They should have the results out on them, too. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Anywhere from 20.
Yeah, it's amazing that any Republican ever got into office. Yeah.
It is absolutely amazing.
Not that the Republicans are all that good.
Yeah, it just, and that's only one out of the 67 counties, and they're actually looking at 20. I'm sure they're the most populous counties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, questions. First question, maybe Brent would like if he were here, but it is, what is a common lawyer? Oh, Brent always says when he signs on or off, common lawyer, Brent Allen Winters.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll let him answer that. Maybe when he comes on, we'll read that question for him. Do know that he's a lawyer that practices the common law, and of course, it's very difficult to do these days.
Yep.
But that is the intent, and the intent that all of us needs to really realize. When I go into court, of course, I want the common law, and anybody that is under law wants the common law. You know, the people want the common law, not the equity. But, yeah, we'll wait for Brent, and maybe we'll read that question to him.
Okay, good. Second question. What is an unalienable right?
Well, an unalienable right is one that cannot be sold, ultimately, or given away, taken away. It can't be transferred. Unalienable, inalienable, they both mean the same thing. I did look both of those words up. You can find them both in Black's law, and they do, or they're synonymous. But that's what it means. You can't get these rights. In a sense that you can't receive them from another person. They can't be transferred. I think the key is that they cannot be transferred. They're unalienable or inalienable. So the point is it comes from God.
Okay. Now, the next person found a website, and I'm not familiar with it. Maybe you are. It's called prisonactivist.org.
Yeah, let me just make one more note. That is with the unalienable, inalienable rights is something you're born with. That's the only way you can achieve it, being a human being. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. As I was saying, this person found a website. It's the prisonactivist.org, and he seems to think it's an excellent source of resources. I'm not familiar with it. Maybe you are. If so, he's wondering if we would like to have our contact information added to their website.
So this person is part of this prison activist group?
He follows it. I'm not sure he's part of it.
Well, maybe we should have a communication. Maybe you can give a call and talk to someone with our leadership, and we can see if it's something we're interested in connecting with. I mean, we do want to connect with any group, as many groups as possible. They're in the National Liberty Alliance. So anybody, as long as we basically have the same foundation, we should be able to connect. Did they leave any contact information? You must have the email address, right?
Yeah, I can get the email address. Sean.
Yeah, maybe someone can communicate with them and get a conversation going. And if it's interesting, then maybe we can meet and see how we can work together.
Okay. Next, I hear a little more and more about attempts at convening an Article 5 convention of the states. Project with an emphasis on congressional term limits. My concern regarding this is, if this major event commences, can it pervert the Bill of Rights, particularly our First, Second, and all unalienable rights?
Yeah, the very last thing in today's environment we would want is a constitutional convention. And look, before we try to tinker around with the Constitution and try to add to the thing, why don't we first try to see if we can't obey and exercise the Constitution we have. I think that's really the attitude we have to have. We do have the Republic Review, a group we're working with, and their purpose and idea is working within the state legislators, talking with state legislators to get them to come together on a Republic Review on the federal level. In other words, review our Republic, review the laws that have been put in place going way back to the beginning, ultimately, and then removing anything that is unconstitutional. And then in the process, of course, you know, with today's modern days and certain situations, there may be certain things that we should have today that we didn't have, or they didn't have back when our republic was created because of our technology and so on. These things could be debated and thought about among the states. Maybe at that point we can see what we can do and where we can go with a constitutional convention. One of the things we wouldn't want at a constitutional convention is bureaucrats involved with this, politicians. We don't want politicians involved in this whole process. And before we would even want to think about entertaining this kind of a thing beyond a public review, we really have to come to the point where the house is cleaned. And I think that time is coming soon, of course. But we have to get rid of all of these criminals. There are a lot of people resigning. There are a lot of people in large corporations resigning. There are a lot of people that are resigning in Congress that are not going to run again. I heard, I think it was 29 was the last count, and more to come. And the idea about this is these people have been brought into submission to stand up for the Republic and to bring forth the evidence, I think, is really what's involved here. They're guilty to some degree, but not to a major degree. A lot of people get stuck between a rock and a hard place, and I think that's a lot of those people that were stuck between a rock and a hard place, and however that works out, so they may not be prosecuted. But their participation really is not direct, I think. So a lot of those people are resigning, a lot more, I think, will maybe end up in jail before they even have the opportunity to resign. We'll see what happens. So,
okay. Does NLA believe that Donald Trump will seek re-election in 2024 amid the growing fraud?
Well, I don't have any doubt about that. I also believe, following, Q and other things. We do have a page up here about this on our website about what's going on as far as devolution is concerned, and that would be under today's issues. You can click on devolution, and there's quite a bit there to see. I truly believe that Donald Trump is still the president of the United States, and I don't think that's just a statement to be made. This is as serious as the days of Lincoln, when there was two presidents of the United States. Well, this is another time when there was two presidents of the United States. I am clearly convinced, and if you listen very carefully, Trump continues to say the best is yet to come. You're gonna love the way this ends. He said that also, and he also talked about quitting. Never ever quit, and he's not a quitter. And I believe he went into the office for the sole purpose of really, bringing this nation back onto its feet and back where it belongs and bring the power back to the people. And he said that in his inauguration, that he wants to bring the power back to the people. He hasn't finished his job. And clearly, when you look back in hindsight, if he would have made moves to really correct this problem, it would be a major change, and a lot of people would not have understood that because they wouldn't understand what's really going on behind the scenes, what's really happening. And so you could see when he was in power, he couldn't have done it. But now, he's prevented the enemy from really pushing too many things too far, and they really have become desperate at this point, And so the regular person seems to be seeing this. And in conversations with people, I'm amazed at how many people really are seeing that there is a major, major, serious problem within our government, that these people are out of control. And I think most people, I would think maybe 85-90% of the people, when the things come down, when the military makes a move, they're going to, most 85-90% of people, I think, are going to understand this quite quickly. Understand it before, or understand it as it's happening quite quickly. I think there'll always be maybe that small percentage, 8-10%, that just totally brain dead, and they're just not going to get it at all. But if something happened, if Trump tried to move a military movement back while he was in office, I think that could have caused a serious revolution in the streets. A civil war, really, is what might have occurred. But maybe not so much, because when you really look at the numbers of these people, considering all the cheating they've done, and especially what you just read about, Jan, all of the corruption, and still it's amazing that Republicans or other people other than Democrats got into office still, I think that tells us a lot more about the numbers of people that really do understand more than we realize. But there are a lot of brain dead people out there, and hopefully they'll be woken up one day.
Yeah. At a rally, I think it was yesterday or the day before in Texas, Trump said, I was the 45th president of the United States, and I will be the 47th. So it sounds like
that's right. I heard that too. Yeah.
I think he's got it in mind.
Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, he'd be the 46th because Biden never was. And remain, well, 45. Do they count them 45, 46, and 47? If he, well, no one's done three terms, but 45 and 46, have he done two terms, or would it be 45 held twice?
You're still the 45th if you do two or one.
Well, then he'll only be the 45th maybe because I do perceive he's going to spend the last few years cleaning up and putting things back together, and I do think he's going to run for a third term, and I think the people will accept it considering the situation and for him to be able to complete the job that he started. He's a very unique individual to be in a position and a mindset and knowledge and everything to be able to deal with this problem. There's not many people that could have dealt with the problem that he's dealing with. So he's uniquely qualified. So, all right, any other questions?
We have one more. It's, what is the meaning of false imprisonment in the judicial system, and is there a remedy for it?
Well, you know, false imprisonment is ultimately anyone that's using their powers and authorities going beyond their jurisdiction. And, you know, it could be, for instance, well, it could be a number of things. A judge could be guilty of this, imprisoning someone falsely. As a matter of fact, if you really think about this, anybody that's in jail that was put in jail by a judge without a grand jury indictment and a trial jury really is being falsely imprisoned. Anybody that is detained really, in theory, is being falsely imprisoned because they're being detained. You know, the idea of even the fact that you have to go to court, this sort of a, you're being detained to some degree, your liberty is limited because you have to be somewhere at a certain time. Maybe your liberty is in jeopardy in that situation, you know, other than generally a traffic violation or something, you know, code violation of that type. But false imprisonment, I think, could be defined as quite a bit, but ultimately it is ultimately being detained physically where someone is maybe abusing their authority, their jurisdiction, or outright fraud. I mean, you know, there's sometimes the government just goes out after you and they make up charges and they get it through the whole process, and that happens a lot more than people realize. So that's all false imprisonment. I don't know if I'm missing any other way to look at this. And I guess that's about all I could think of.
Okay, that's the last question, John.
Okay, any announcements?
No, no more announcements.
Okay, we're going to go right into Q&A. I see a couple people in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. I do want to try to do the best we can to stick on point and try to focus in on what we're really trying to do here. And that, of course, is building committees of safety in every county across America. And of course, the job of the Committee of Safety, you know, is really to work within their communities on the grassroots level to take control of local government and working your way up collectively, you know, by taking control of, for instance, your congressman within the subdivision, that particular subdivision that you might be in, and political subdivision. So, you know, to make sure we take control of our congressmen, and we need to do that collectively across the nation, you know, other people in other counties and other people in other counties within other states. And if we get a control from the grassroots level, our elected officials, and again, also you have state elected officials, you have your senators, your state senators, and you have your other representatives in the state, you got your governor. And then, of course, most importantly, really, is starting off at the very, very grassroots, working with your sheriff and getting control to bring all these people in the lower government, whether it be a village, town, city, county, bringing all these people in subjection. That's where it really starts, because once you bring your local government into subjection of the people, bringing them under the back under the chains of the Constitution, let's say, as Jefferson puts it, then at that point you're reasonably secured, because if you have a government that is acting correctly and obeying the Constitution, it'll prevent any assault from a higher government, such as the federal government, assault against the individual. But of course, again, you know, we need to take back our congressmen and bring them under control. One of the things we have to come to realize, I know this is going to be difficult, but we have to really come to a realization of this, is we must get rid of political parties. And once you get your committees of safety going, you want to really seriously think about and potentially doing is getting rid of your party affiliation. I'm a registered Republican. I'm still a registered Republican, but very soon I'm going to go and take that away. I'm going to change that and get rid of my party affiliation. And if you don't have a party affiliation, there's a special form for walking anyone from anybody's papers, petitions, in order to get them elected. You have to get so many signatures, so to walk their designating petitions. And if you're a Republican, you can only walk Republicans. If you're a Democrat, you can only walk Democrats, and so on and so forth. But if you go into this non-party process where you're not part of a party, then you can walk anyone's petition. That does get a little tricky just in the paperwork, but other than that, it opens us up to be able to back people on whatever, you know, party they're in. And then we need to, once this movement gets movement, and I certainly hope we can do this, because parties are the destructiveness of our nation, that and bar attorneys. Those are the two things, the very strongest tools that we use to destroy our nation, and it started way back. Once we start getting this going and feeling strong about this, we have to require the people that we're putting into office to leave their parties also, become a non-party person. It can be accomplished. I know a lot of people say, well, you're never going to get rid of parties. Well, we definitely have to try, number one. I do believe we can, and the only way we'll do it is through education. So the question really becomes, well, okay, how do you get all of the populace to get involved to do this kind of thing? Well, I think we have to go back to Jefferson and realize what Jefferson said. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And I assure you, if you get 200 200 more people in every county or most counties across America, you are definitely the majority that's participating, even more than the committeemen that are out there, because they are always they're always looking for people. They never have enough people. We would overtake that whole process right there. And our pressure in getting people into the office as statesmen and not politicians, and to move away from the party, you know, gang, so to speak, because, you know, you always notice the Republicans stick with the Republicans, the Democrats, but no one sticks up for the people. We need people who are going to go stick up for the people, and that's the attitude. So that could be changed relatively quickly once we have 200 or more people in every county or most counties across America. Not long after that change can take effect. And again, it all has to do with education, because remember, the 200 or so people in every county really are being educated. In order to make that move and to take that position, they have to understand that position, so they will become educated in the process and the procedures and how America was destroyed by political parties, and what George Washington and other founding fathers had to say about that, and how we should not have parties, and yet here we are with parties. Well, once we become educated and realize and we make that change and start the pressure, it's not going to take long as we're working within our communities. You know, we have different committees. We have the committees of education that should be established in every county, which is working within the schools within our counties. to require certain things being taught, like, let's say, the civics and the Constitution and law. You know, everybody should grow up understanding law, the difference between law and equity, and be able to represent themselves in a court of law. And once we bring that education into the schools and then into the communities and pushing the control of the education of the children to the parents, getting more participation, and it would be the committees of safety that are spearheading all these things. So everybody in the counties at some point in time, once we start exercising our authorities as we the people and open up to anybody who wants to join, so we're not limited to 200 people, we're not limited to 2,000 people, we're not limited to 5,000 people. It doesn't matter. Anybody who wants to participate, they should. And we have to teach our children that that is their duty to participate. But anyway, that I think will grow very quickly. But it starts off with really building the foundation of this. And again, that brings us to the committees of safety on the grassroots level in the very beginning, whether it be 10 people, 50 people, or 100 people. But building up and working towards that idea of coming at least 200 people in every county. And again, I will assure you, once this movement gets going and we start to exercise our authorities and bring government back into submission, a lot more people are going to be joining the committees of safety. It's just going to come in the droves. In the beginning, you know, the idea is everybody bring one. So every time you come to a meeting, you bring one person. So if you have 10 people, now you have 20 people at that meeting. The next meeting, you'll have the 20 plus another 20. That's 40. The next meeting, 40 plus 40. That's 80, and so on. You know, you could see how the numbers will grow. And again, the people who have problems, once they realize that there is the Committee of Safety to help solve the problems with a bureaucrat, some government bureaucrat or situation, then the word's going to get out even more. Those people are going to connect. So it's all possible, and we can get to that point, but that's where we have to get to. All right, anyway, let me take the first person here in the queue. Again, anybody who wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. We have Linda from Virginia. You got the mic.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead, Linda.
Okay, I had called in, it's been a while now, I had 3 red oak trees down in a snowstorm, so been dealing with all that, but I had mentioned that I had an issue with the state of Virginia on taxes,
mm-hmm.
And they basically, I don't know, to summarize it, they sent me a bill for $10,000. I went back, I challenged it, and they immediately reduced it to $5,000. But they still had 1 year on there, and that's like half of the bill, you know, like $2,500,
mm-hmm.
That they say that I owe. And the way they say I owe it is they say I did not file taxes that year. Now, this is for 2006, mind you. They're going back, what, 14, 15 years?
Right.
So it took ridiculous amount of effort to even find the records and all that. But I did a whole package and sent them. What I found out was they had brought this up in 2009. And then I had sent them a copy of my filing. This was back before we filed electronically,
well,
you know?
They don't have no proof or anything. I mean, they just...
Right. They don't have any proof.
Well, let me tell you.
I have filed my taxes every year. So, you know, what? I didn't file that year, and it's no more unique from any other year.
Well, let me just ask a quick question. Do you have the 2006 records?
Yes, I have the file. I have a copy of the filing.
Did you give it to them?
But yeah, when they brought it up in 2009, I sent them a copy of it. Now, I say that this was back before they were doing electronic. Not many people were filing electronically, okay? But I, in my infinite wisdom, decided to file. I think I filed TurboTax. So the copy that I have is not signed. You know what I mean?
Well, let me tell you what I found out. You know, when it comes to collecting tax on the state level, and even dealing with the unemployment people in unemployment, and they're all agencies, and they have their cases really is administrative cases, but they have no teeth. It's not like they have an IRS, which is a collection agency. They don't have a collection agency like that. And I'm kind of surprised, because usually they kind of sit back and let the IRS do their damages, and then maybe they can tap into that and kind of collect off of them, because they're the ones out there making the fight and the battle and going against the people and bringing them into courts. I found out here in New York, they just don't bother. I mean, yeah, they'll threaten you. I've been threatened for 20 years. Well, only a couple of times over the 20 years, that maybe 25 years now that they've, you know, started out after me ago. But they kind of fell away quite quickly when I just ignored them. They just don't seem to have any clout. And I don't want to say that they're not going to do that to you. Your biggest problem is that you filled the papers out and you sent it in. I would just give them that, since you've done it, I just give them a copy of that and say, there's what I filed on 2000 and, so was it 2006?
I have sent them a copy of the filing on three different times. The first time when they asked for it in 2009, and again in a bankruptcy filing, I had to submit all my filings.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's amazing on a bankruptcy, you know, taxes, you can't write taxes off on a bankruptcy. It's really weird.
You can on a Chapter 13.
I'm sure you probably can, but they say you can't, at least on the federal level. I don't know about the state level.
Well, you can, but it has to be a Chapter 13. You have to have, and here's the catch, if you can believe this. You have to have filed all your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
In order to file the bankruptcy. So I had to submit all of those to my attorney, who then filed it with the court. And I would not have been able to go forward with that unless I had filed all my taxes.
Right.
So how can the state of Virginia come back? Anyway, I'm not arguing. You know, you say that they're not going to do anything.
I don't think they will. I mean, you
well,
can't.
Well, I think they have the power. I think they have the power to.
They don't. Well, they've got, they say certain things and they do certain things. But the thing is income tax is unlawful, and they have to defend that. Okay,
but,
they don't have a title. You know, USC 26 to rest upon.
If you another point I want to bring up is that if you look at the code, the states are predicating the state tax on the federal. If you have no federal tax, they have no state tax. They want to see
your... They absolutely did that. They absolutely sent me a thing, said, oh, we checked your federal filing, and we determined it's correct. And it's not correct.
You see, if you had no federal, they got not a leg to stand on, because they're predicated on the federal. See, if you owe no
federal
tax, you won't owe
federal
state tax either.
Well, we can't get too far into this.
Yeah, I know. But here's my point in that. In the meantime, you know how they do. They tack on interest and penalties every year. Every as time goes by, they're tacking mm-hmm. more and more, and they're actually obstructing my ability. There are a few years that I do owe money for, and I'd be happy to pay that. But they're obstructing my ability to do that, because what they'll do is they'll take whatever payments I make and they'll put it on what they are, you know.
Well, yeah, they do what they want with it. Look, here's what you can do, but it's going to require an education. And I don't know how much of an education you've put into yourself in this, how long you've been working with us, and what have you done to try to educate yourself. But you have to be able to represent yourself in court. You have to understand at least the law, okay, and the difference between law and equity. And this is an equity situation, so it gets into an administrative court. But the point is if you can represent yourself and be able to articulate yourself on paper, the very first thing you would want to do is a notice and demand directly to the individual which I'm not sure.
Right. That's what I'm calling about. I was doing the talked to you about this before.
Okay.
And I'm doing the notice and demand, and
My point is once you do a notice and demand and they fail, because they're going to fail, they're not going to respond to that. And you're going to do, in that notice and demand, you're going to make it obvious that you want to deal with this problem, get it over with, but you have to tell me what it is and give me specifics. And they're not going to be able to do that either. And they're not going to be able to push it too far. Remember, it's unlawful. I've never seen a state really go out after the people for income tax. For sales tax is one thing, because that they will come out tooth and nail on. But the income tax, they always leave that up to the feds because they get their piece of the action. And all the money when you pay in and everything goes to the federal government. The federal government redistributes it back into the state so they get their state monies. So the thing is, really, they're banking on USC 26 in order to make their position an argument. My point is this. You do a notice and demand. Be very serious about it. Give them the 60 days instead of 30. Me, I don't care. I'm at a point. I'll give everyone 30 days. The government gets 30 days just like anyone else. I got just as much business going on or situations in life that they have business. They got lots of people, and we've been paying them to do a job. But in any event, give a notice demand. Give them 60 days. If they fail, then give them the final thing. Make sure you record it with the county clerk. You know, you file a paper of the notice demand with the county clerk. And then you want to go and move it into the state court.
Do I address this to the Commonwealth of Virginia Department of Taxation?
You've got to find the individuals who are sending you the paperwork and go after the individuals, because they're stepping outside. First of all, you know, you want a documentation. That means I understand that. Listen, you want documentation. They can't give you documentation. They're not going to give you documentation because that requires someone to do an affidavit, and no one is going to put
They don't even put their name on it. They put like client ID and a number.
That's the person you sue. You sue John Doe, Mary Jo Doe. You sue that person under that number. That person has to be identified when you get into court. Don't worry about the identification of the person at this moment in time. You have a number or some kind of a information there where you can trace that person. They know who that person is, and they're going to have to step up one day. But the bottom line is you have to build a case of fraud, because that's what they're doing, okay? It's really extortion is what they're doing. There's no one, when you go into the court and you have your affidavits and you file all the papers, well, look at an affidavit, unrebutted stands. They can't rebut your affidavit without doing another affidavit to rebut that. So if you can know how to do this and get into the court and, you know, move it through the process and move it eventually into the court and represent yourself in the court, then you're good as gold. You're done. It's never going to get that far, probably, because once you start moving it into the court, they want to settle real quick. But here's
When I get to the factual background, is this something that's very detailed, or is it just like summary-like of the issue?
It's very clear. You got the facts. They did not rebut them. Case over. I mean, there's nothing really to argue. You make an argument of whatever they bring up in the court. I'm in the middle of writing a book, okay? And I'm going to try to get it out as quick as possible. And I'm not sure what I'm going to call it, but for right now, I'll call it Court Access, okay? And I'm going to lay out the framework of how a court system works, you know, the difference between law and equity, and explain the situation, the problems, give sort of an overview of how the court system works, and then get into the details in this book. And it's not going to be a big book. It's not going to be 1,000 pages like my other book. I mean, it may be a couple of hundred pages at most, but maybe more than that, because it'll give some good information in the back of the book. But the bottom line is that book, if you don't know how to get into court, that book should be able to help you. But meanwhile, if you go out and follow the instructions on a notice and demand and be very careful with it to make sure you get everything in that says you need to have, then that's where you'd start. And you can find that on our website here.
On the notice and demand, on the factual background, I'm not going to put every little detail in here.
No. You don't have to. You just have to put the facts, and you have to put a sworn affidavit in there. The notice and demand is a sworn affidavit, and you're demanding them to respond, and you're giving them X amount of days to respond. Give the state, give them 60 days. If you go to our website, highlight Education Starts Here, come down to Law, and then over on Law, you'll see if you're looking, are you on a computer? I don't know if you can see this, if you're on the computer. Then you click on Court Forms and Process.
I've already got the notice and demand.
Okay, so that's all the information you need in order to start the process. Now, moving it into the court, there should be information. Let me go open that page. There should be information on this page.
You said I'm going to file a copy with the court clerk.
Later on you'll follow. You want to go with the county clerk. You want to file a copy of notice of demand with the county clerk to put it onto the record. Okay, so you're sending it into the state.
When you say county clerk.
Right, that's the county clerk. You'll file it with the county court if you have to go to the court clerk at some point, which is really the same place. You're going to go to the county clerk who takes all the papers for the courts anyway. Okay, court clerks are really in the court, of course, but the county clerk starts the process at the county clerk's office. That's where the process of a court starts. That's where you go to file the first papers.
I don't know who. I know who the court clerk is, okay?
Well, you just go to the county building, and any clerk in there works for the county clerk. I mean, there's one elected county clerk in the court, in the county building, and mm-hmm. And all the other clerks, you know, are working underneath that clerk. And you're going in there, and you want to file at some point. First of all, you want to file on the record this paperwork, which is a notice and demand to the state or individuals in the state. And then you want to, at some point in time, you go back to the clerk. You get an index number. I'm not sure how your state works. Here in New York, we get index numbers.
I don't think we have index numbers. Okay. I've never.
It works out a little better for us because you know you don't have to put all the money up. It's $210 to get an index number, and I think it's $105 to move it into the court for judicial intervention. So that's $315. So we can do it for $210 instead of $315. And you see, the whole purpose of that is really to make your argument. When you file your papers at that point with the clerk, you now start the argument. A court case starts right then and there. You haven't moved it into the court yet, but prior to going to the court, there's got to be a battle on paper back and forth between the two parties on what's going on, and when everything is all said and done, that's when you move it into court. And there's a lot that happens and a lot of tricks. I'll write about this, a lot of tricks that the lawyers will pull on you in the game that they play to get you into the court right away in order to be thrown out, and what they're using to throw you out and how you can defend against that. But there's too much to talk about on a Monday night call, and we really want to focus in on committees and safety. But we will be working on that. And maybe what I'll do, if someone wants to really get into discussions on these legal things, you know, I was running a Tuesday night, which I don't think I'm going to run that anymore unless I'm requested. If somebody has a request, let's say a group of people doing committees of safety, and there's not enough time here on a Monday night, and say, well, can we meet Tuesday night and at 7:15, which is when I was running the program from 7:15 to 8:15 for 1 hour. So I would go in and talk with that one group for that 1 hour, or anybody else that comes in to deal with a particular situation. I'll do the same thing for this kind of a situation, for thoughts and advice, so we don't eat up the whole, you know, time here at a Monday night program. We want to focus in on the committees of safety. But if you want to know the next part of the process, maybe in the near future, you can ask me. Can we meet Tuesday in the room at 7:15 and talk about this in further detail? And anybody who wants to join and listen in or pipe in, they can join too. And we'll do it. It'll be right here in this room. It'll just be at 7:15 on Tuesday, and it'll end at 8:15. So this way I can help people on those cases. But first, work on the committee, on your paperwork, and then ask to talk to me. Maybe by the time we get to that, maybe my book will be close to being done. My book is really pretty much written, okay, in the sense that I've done so much research, over 12, 13 years of research. Everything I need to put into this book and focus in, I've got. I just got to put it together and sew it together, put some logic to it, start from, you know, A and go to Z. And so that's going to happen pretty quickly, and I really want to do that. so that people will be able to represent themselves in court. And,
well,
and I'm not going to be charging $300 or anything like that for it. I will charge for it because it's going to be a book. But it'll be something like $20 or something. I don't know. I'm going to get a regular book out there, and then I'll have myself available to speak to people on a Tuesday if someone needs to talk to me. But go ahead, and we want to move to the next person because we're running short on time. But go ahead.
Well, my goal is to, instead of just sitting back and letting time go by and them increasing the penalties and fees, is to keep
notice and demand right now.
Yeah, to keep launching like counter arguments against.
Listen to me. Okay, get your notice and demand. Go through that paperwork very carefully. Get your notice and demand. You are telling them to cease and desist. Either put up or shut up is the attitude you have to have to these people, okay? You either come with your documentation or you stop. And this is what I'm going to do. And if you refuse, if you don't do this or you do that and you do this and I don't and you don't do that, then this is what I'm going to do. The whole paperwork is all laid out. Put that together. When you get that together, before you hand it in, that's when we have a discussion on a Tuesday.
Okay.
And anybody, you bring this up on a Monday to book me for the following Tuesday, which today would be tomorrow, of course. Unless I'm busy, it'll be the following Tuesday.
I'd
want you to do this on a Monday night program to say, hey, look, we want to do this so other people can know that if they want to come and listen in or participate, they can also. So
just a final comment. I had another situation. I'm not going to go into it because it's been too long, but... these government agencies, it just seems like they are riddled with incompetent people and that are causing these problems.
Ignorant, incompetent, and corrupt. And a lot of these people are true believers in what they're doing. They think that what they're doing is the lawful thing. A lot of them, we're talking about the low-end people. But they're all, all participating in criminal activities. And let me just make one other point. The book I'm putting together is not just going to be on court access. It's going to be on defenses. How to defend yourself in these traffic courts and how to win in these traffic courts. I think I do have a way to win. And I just won one, but I didn't have to take it through the whole big process, but I did win one. And I've won quite a few of them, actually, because usually I just write a paper and 50% of the times they never respond back, and I never hear anything about the ticket, so I ignored it. They didn't know it. We go on.
I won one by just calling their bluff,
Mm-hmm. Well, my point I'm trying to say is I'm gonna give you defenses on how to defend against the IRS and the paperwork to lay out for that. The same thing with the code violations, there's traffic violations. How to defend against that, and all of the steps to do. They do this, you do that. They do this, you do that. But generally, along the road, a lot of them will fall away. Same thing here with the state. I'll tell you what. The day if you have to get as far as putting it into the court, when you file that paper in the court, they're going to deal with you real quickly because they cannot defend themselves. They have nothing. They have nothing. But with that, we've got to cut it short. So I'll give you 30 seconds.
I was going to say, don't forget code enforcement in that book.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
history.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But anyway, let's do that. Work on your paperwork and catch me on Monday to ask for a Tuesday meeting. And we do an announcement here on a Monday so people are listening in. They want to join us, they can join us on Tuesday. Okay?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot, Linda.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Is Brent here? Has anyone seen Brent? I don't see Brent.
That's a no.
Gerard, are you at the mic? Gerard?
Yeah.
There you go. All right, you want to take things now? Brent isn't here yet. You have to keep an eye open for him. You want to take the controls? Anybody who wants to get into the queue, we only have one person in the queue right now, star 6 and a 1. Let's try to keep focused on committees of safety and all the work involved, which is, the political process, the judicial process, the educational. I mean, there's a lot of different subject matters involved with the committees of safety. So let's try to stay on focus as much as we can. And just for announcement, as I just mentioned, just thought of this idea, so... We're not going to have any Tuesday more meetings unless it's requested. Someone requests it on a Monday, then I'll meet with them Tuesday at 7:15 here in this room. We'll give an hour to discuss any particular situation or problem, and it could be a legal situation too, like we just did, we talked about with Linda. If there's a group, for instance, you got a committee of safety going, and the group wants to get a private meeting with me in some county committee of safety, and we can make an appointment type thing on a Tuesday from 7:15 to 8:15, we'll do that. I'll try to make a note of that idea and put it up, post it up on the website. But right now, just wanted to announce that, and I'll probably make note of it every Monday. Especially when we get a subject that really is kind of going off of what we really want to discuss here on a Monday night program, we'll try to push that conversation onto a Tuesday. Okay, Gerard, you got the board?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. So we only have, let me see.
Nope, got three people there now.
Yeah. All right. Trevor, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, Trevor.
That.
Yeah, I could just hear you. Go ahead.
Perfect. Well, I just actually got in to the National Alliance just about a week ago, but went through, finished the intro and started the another course. Can't think of it right now. Got the book, just came in today, but and I got in contact with the leader of the Connecticut.
Yeah, let me interrupt you just for a second here. So you took the foundation study, which is a series of videos.
Yes.
And you were able to get through that. There was no problems going through that, right?
No problems going through that one. I started the civics course.
Okay, are there any problems with that so far? I mean, have you moved along in it yet? Because we're having some complaints, and I'm trying to find out where the problems might be, if there is a problem. I'm not even sure anymore.
Yeah, the, let's see, what was it?
If anybody's having a problem.
I sent an email today.
I'm sorry, say that again?
There was one course I started I was having issues with. I sent an email to Kathleen.
Okay.
I believe, to point out, I sent a screenshot of where it was happening, and the, like, next button wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent that information to where it said to send it.
Keep us informed on that as you go through. If you're back on next Monday, if that problem is solved, let us know. If it's not solved, let us know. We want to make sure that these courses, that people are flowing through it and aren't having a problem. Anybody else that's having a problem, please make a complaint so we can repair the problem. I don't think you'll have a problem with I didn't think you'd have a problem with the study. And the study,
That one went great. I think it was the Constitution.
Yeah, that's the one study. I think the Constitution one was shut down, but then it was reopened by request. And it's really a simple constitutional course. It's really kind of an introduction, so we changed the name to an introduction to the Constitution. And, you know, when you get into the government by consent, you're going to get heavily into the Constitution. And then I thought, well, let me just yank that one out. But then the idea came, well, look, why don't we leave that in, because then people can get familiar. So a simple course first and something a little more difficult later. So that made sense. So we reopened it up. And I heard that there were problems. So anybody having problems, really get in touch with us on what the problems are. Talk with Kathleen first. Talk with us on a Monday night program. Let us know. We want to make sure people don't have problems getting through these courses, because this is the lifeblood of what we're doing, what National Liberty Alliance is doing, creating the committees of safety and getting the people off of the grassroots to take control. And it's their lifeblood is the education, the understanding of these things. So we must make sure that these things are working well. But let me back out of the conversation, and you can get back into it with Gerard, and I'll listen in.
No worries.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
So, no, it's all good. I'm going to start going through your book. I went through the committee of safety handbook, the initial one, in preparation, because I have a call tomorrow.
That has been updated, by the way, and I should have put a date on it, so I think it was just updated a couple of weeks ago, the Committee of Safety handbook. And definitely,
yeah, I got it. Yeah, I just got it yesterday.
One of the things I want to talk about is we're looking to use Meetup, and I wrote that into the book also, into the handbook, which I'm going to take it out. We don't need Meetup. We don't have to have a web connection. People come together every month in the county. They'll either come or they don't. Everybody's probably not going to come every meeting, but generally speaking, we would hope everybody come most of the meetings. And we don't really need to communicate in between other than the committees really working. I think by using a Meetup, and the reason I'm backing out of it, because I had a problem with Meetup, someone else had a problem with Meetup where they were shut down. I was locked out and they had no access and I was a paying customer. But anyway, I'm thinking, let's get rid of it. And I thought about this and saying, why do we want to have a Meetup group? Because now we're going to have people discussing things and getting into conversations and spending their time onto the website in opposed to coming to the meeting. So we don't need it. So I'm going to move that out of the handbooks for anybody that has gotten to that point. If people want to use that, that's their business, but I don't think you need it, and it's just an extra expense. I think they charge, goodness, what is it? I forget what they charge, $60 or $70 every quarter or so. I don't remember, to be honest. So, but anyway, I'm sorry, back to you.
Perfect, no problem. Always good to get the information out there when it comes up. So I guess, you know, I'm kind of working through that. I've been diving into common law and stuff for six, 9 months now. And there's a few things, I mean, I don't necessarily have an issue disclosing that, or actually a year or so, disclosing that I've, you know, my personal steps against the tyranny, as far as not financing them and not obeying them. So I guess my main question really was just what resources. I'll definitely look out for your book because it sounds great, but I was seeing if you had any resources that I would be able to dive into in regards to dealing with the police and courts if a situation arises.
Well, real quickly on that, you know, if you go up to Education Starts Here, are you on computer? Can you see the screen?
No, I'm on the phone.
Okay.
If you go to nationalliberty alliance.org,
on the blue bar, you highlight Education Starts Here. You come down to Law, highlight Law, keep coming down to hit Law. And then another group of boxes will open, and you go to Court Forms and Process. Now, if you don't see that, it's because you're not a premier member. There's a couple of things on our site you need to be a premier member to participate. And a premier member is only someone given $5 a month or more, so it's not really anything.
No, I signed up when I found you guys, because I've been looking for somebody actually doing something in regards to trying to correct the direction things have been going, and I just hadn't found anything over the last like 2 years.
Well, and you got to be careful on the site, on the web, because I tell you, you're going to get a lot of bad information that'll really get you into more trouble, and it's just problematic. You have to stay focused and really use the law, the common law, and the you know.
Well, that's it. I'm basing my stuff off of the Constitution and those things. The little things I do, not do anything in regards to, you know, that stuff. But I limit it to things that are constitutional.
On this page, Court Forms, Process, Instructions, okay, you'll get the information you're looking for. Now, right now we have Jurisdictionary up there, How to Win in Court Without a Lawyer. You can click on this guy. When I took the course, it was $300. I think he went to $350 or $400. So if people want to take the course, that's fine. The only thing you have to do is ignore the civil side of what he has to say. You know, stick with the Constitution and not with the necessarily with the codes. In some cases, of course, you do want to use codes because codes are lawful when applied against the proper individuals, like the people in the office, you know. But, you know, he's charging $300 or whatever. You know, one of the problems I had, and he may have fixed this, was he doesn't give you a good overview. you know, you're kind of just thrown into this thing and trying to figure it out. It's like a, you know, he didn't, I think, this out, but maybe he's thought it out since, and maybe he's got a new approach on that. You need to give an overview, you know, some kind of framework for people to take the information you've given them to stick them somewhere. So you got to give that overview, the synopsis,
yeah,
whatever you want to call it.
How to apply things and
yeah,
what context and all that stuff. Yep.
So when I book, and I'm not going to charge it $300. I mean, I'm going to do it as a book, and you know, whatever the book should sell for it, you know, $19.99 or $29.99 or $95 or whatever it should be, that's what it's going to be. And but it'll be a gold mine of information, I'll tell you that, because it's 12, 13 years of research, and it's rock solid stuff. A lot of it's been tested. But the fact of the matter, it is the law. It is the facts. It's the good research. And everything I do, you will find I'll give you lots of footnotes. So I give all of the documentation. Anything I have to say is already backed up with documentation. You read my book, I have, I forget how many, over 1,000, I should go back and look at the number, but well over 1,000 footnotes in the book itself. So everything I talk about is documented. And all of the papers we write are documented. But right here on this page, you know, instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction, instructions and forms to move your case for cause, instructions and forms to file habeas corpus, how to move the court for enforcement, notice and demands, many, many downloads of different things. And there is a kind of a book I put together years ago. I'm not happy with it, but you can get a lot out of it. It's under these downloads. We got all the Blacks. We got Black's Law, Brovier's Laws. We got memorandums. We got landmark Supreme Court cases. So in here, there's a lot of information you can use to help yourself right now. But once the book comes out, and if I can get the time to do it, I could probably put it together in a week. I just got to get a solid week to work on this, and then I'm going to get it out as soon as I can. That'll help to fund also, of course, NLA a lot better, to bring more money in, and also help the people who are struggling in the courts and need to know how. And we need to teach our children in schools. We need to teach our children how to have access to the courts. This is their court. The courts of law belongs to the people. We should be able to access. We don't need some lawyer telling us how to do it. We need to go in ourselves. See, I'll tell you what, the only time you really need a lawyer, in my opinion, is if it's a criminal case, if it's a difficult one on one hand. You definitely want to participate with your case, but if you're guilty especially, you want to be quiet, so you want a lawyer to be a mouthpiece. But other than that, you know, you can have counsel, and you should have counsel, but you should run your own case because no one knows your case better than you. They'll tell you, you know, only a fool will represent themselves. Well, I say only a fool will let a bar attorney represent them. That's my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly it. I don't have anything pending. I just made my decision that I'm done letting the government dictate my life, period, in some sense. You know, I do what I need to do, what everybody does as far as taking care of you know, those things that are somewhat legal, or you know, at least legal within the Constitution, until we reverse some of those things. But I guess one other quick thing, just because I was in touch with the leader of Connecticut, and I guess like 13, I'm not originally from Connecticut, but I guess like 10 or 12 years ago or something, Connecticut like disbanded the sheriffs?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm working on that.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, that's what you were saying. So I'm looking forward to my meeting with her and just continuing the process and getting things rectified so the people can actually stand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to be working on that. So, matter of fact, I'm glad you reminded me of that. I just been so busy, I haven't even gotten to that paperwork yet, so I'm going to try to buckle down in the next day or two on that paperwork so that I can at least start something on that process shortly. But anyway.
Awesome. Well, anything I can do to help, you know, if I need
documentation
connect. Or whatever.
Yeah, connect. We can use people to help us on research. So, yeah, definitely connect.
Awesome.
Okay. Anybody else that wants to connect with us to help us on research, because we're not just dealing with the problems in Connecticut with the sheriffs. We have a situation in Hawaii. We have a situation in Albany. We have a situation in New York where seven counties have no sheriffs here in New York. And I know there's another state or two that has the same kind of a similar problem as New York, or I think it was Maryland that's trying to move to get rid of sheriffs. I forget where it was, but there's something else going on. We have to find out what, and then we have to deal with this and make sure that every county has a sheriff in it.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Well, that's it. Appreciate it.
Good. All right, thanks. Gerard, back to you.
Okay. Hang on a minute. Let me get this up. Okay, we have in the queue Danny from WI. What's that, Wisconsin? Go ahead, Danny. You're unmuted.
Hi there. I'm just calling to also voice, which I did last week's call to, that the civics course is not working for me.
Yeah, whereabouts are you on the civics course that you're having a problem?
I can't get through it at all. I no questions show up. I never get a question. I listen
and,
to the
no questions at all. And you're in you're just beginning it, or are you midway, or where are you?
No, I can't get. I've done the introduction. I've done the
just
first
the
thing.
Intro.
The 12
okay,
minutes.
Sounds like it's been
second one.
Okay.
No questions show up. So.
Terry, have you dived into any of this any more than where we've spoken before concerning this problem?
That he's in the civics course and not foundational study.
Yeah, you're too far away from your mic. I'm not getting it.
I just want to make sure that he's in the civics course and not in foundational study.
Is anybody hearing Terry? I hear her very faintly.
It's very low.
I can hear you. I heard your question, though, Terry. Yes, this is in the civics course.
Okay.
So we have a problem in the constitutional course. We have a problem in the civics course. So those are two courses we're having problems with. I understand why we may have the problem in the constitution course, but the civics course, I don't know. We really got to get together and deal with this problem. Let you and me talk about this tomorrow, Terry.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, well, now I got your voice back. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about this, and maybe we'll get hold of Ryan. We'll see if we can't try to see how Carl is doing, and maybe he can assist us. We'll take it from there. We'll see. And Carl, if you're on tonight, usually he's running the radio, but Carl, if you're on tonight, please, if you have a chance, just give me a contact tomorrow. If we have to, we'll push it through Ryan and get Ryan to work on this. They're not too knowledgeable on the course section of it, though. All right, we'll move on.
John?
Yes?
The data export is still non-functional.
I spoke with Ryan about that. He couldn't fix it, and he said he sent it over to Richard, and I asked him if he could move on it, you know, quickly, because we really need that. And I think I spoke with him on Friday. So I'll give him. We'll be talking with him tomorrow, because we have to deal with this course problem one way or the other.
Right.
So, okay, is there anything else that we should know about, Jen? We have the export and we have...
I think somebody needs to take a run through the government by consent course to make sure it's up and running too.
Yes, yes. And that's what we have to... Francine, we'll try to do this in the afternoon and pull you in, because I think you have access to that to backtrack, and I'd like to talk with you about that. And... all right, so we're going to look into all the courses. All right, let me move back over to Gerard, I guess.
Okay. So that was Danny?
Yep.
You all done, Danny?
Yes, I yield.
Okay, thank you.
All right, talk to you later, Danny. Thanks.
D from PA, from Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, how are you? I need to ask you some advice or help. You know, I bought a house on an installment contract, you know, back in 13, and the seller has been fighting with me back and forth to try to get it back. We've gone to court, and the judge, you know, tells the lawyers that they have to get us to go to close because she never closed. The problem I have is the deed is still in her name. And I'm staying in town at the country property, and I have it locked up, you know, everything, furniture in there, everything. I day and I come back and they break in the house and leave it wide open. This happened 3 or 4 times already. State police won't do anything because they say that it's the deed is still in her name. The way I see it is even if I was just a tenant.
Did you talk to the sheriff?
I didn't talk to the sheriff, no. I did not talk to the sheriff.
He's the guy. What state, what county? You're Pennsylvania.
This is Pennsylvania, Luzerne County. But what I want to do is now, my friend, I'm a constable for 6 years, too, but I'm not, you know, when I go there, they smash my truck. Now they have RVs on a lot. I had somebody check them out. They're not registered since 15. The people who owned them passed away. I don't know who bought the RVs and parked them there. But the problem is I talked to the township supervisor. He says, well, tow them out on the road and tow them on the road and call the state police. What I'm thinking of doing here is just putting a notice on them and seizing them, you know, filing a notice or something. I don't know if I could file a cease and desist or a notice.
Notice and demand will give you a cease and desist because that ultimately is what a notice and demand is all about. You're giving them the opportunity to explain to you the problem, bring forth their evidence, and let's try to settle this, or cease and desist, stop, finish, go away, leave me alone. But you have to do it in a very, very, very proper way. You have to follow the instructions to the letter, because if you miss one point of that, it'll throw the whole thing out, and you'll have problems.
You can just file an abandoned vehicle complaint, and they'll have somebody come and throw it away.
Right. Well,
you'll have to pay storage.
Right, well, that's what I was going to give them notice, 30 days removal or storage daily, you know, daily storage. But I was also going to...
Well, maybe I wasn't paying attention close enough. You have a piece of property and someone's got a vehicle on it?
Well, he never closed on it, so his name's not on the deed. But he has
We've gone to court. She actually filed a court to make it a landlord-tenant complaint. I beat that because I showed all my mortgage payments. The judge says I have equity in the property and the attorneys have to get us to close, but she refuses to close on it. So I'm in a predicament here. They're trashing my house. They keep busting the doors open.
You got to go talk to the sheriff. Go talk to the sheriff.
I called the state police 3 times and the supervisor for the state police.
You go talk to the sheriff, okay?
Okay.
You know, I don't know if your sheriff has a book yet. You know, we have a campaign for constitutional sheriffs. We're asking people to donate, you know, $50 to get their sheriff a book. And when we send the sheriff a book, they also get a letter from Sheriff Darr introducing the book and you know, the importance of the book. They get a letter
I would donate to that because I've been involved with you guys for a long time. I met you here in Wilkes-Barre, Luzerne County, years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm definitely interested in that. The thing is, I'm trying to see maybe if I can get a restraining order to keep anybody away from the property because I'm not there.
The only one that'll potentially help you unless he doesn't even understand his powers is the sheriff.
Right.
This sheriff can settle this problem, I believe.
Well, I think when they go away, well, the problem I have is if I secure the house again, I have no way to keep anybody away from it. That's why I was considering a restraining order or something. I don't know.
Who's opening? Who's breaking in? Do you know?
I believe it's the lady that I bought the place off of. When nobody's there, it's out in the country, nobody's around, she goes there, she steals stuff, she smashes stuff.
Have you thought about setting up some cameras? They got these cameras.
Yeah, that's the next thing I'm doing. I'm going to have a Wi-Fi. The only thing that could alert me if somebody's there, and it could work on its own, you know?
Yeah, you should be, and you can put cameras on the outside, the inside, and you don't even need Wi-Fi. It'll record off. You can buy cameras in.
Well, I'm putting a Wi-Fi hunting cam up the tree, because this way they can't tamper.
Exactly. They won't see it. Yeah,
they'll be independent. But
she's still trespassing.
Yeah, you need to go to see her.
Even if you're a tenant, she can't just come in. You can have her arrested for trespassing.
I had no trespassing signs up there. The ones that have listed the U.S. code, no government allowed on a property, nobody's a $5,000 fine per occurrence for trespassing, but I have to prove she's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
a pitch is only going to give you that, but look, you still should go make the reports to the sheriff. You're going to all the wrong people.
Okay.
You got to go to the sheriff. He's the constitutional protector. He's the guy that is sworn to protect the Constitution and the rights of the king, and you're the king. We are the king. All of us are the kings.
I understand that, John. I'm the guy who went to court and fought with the judges like 5 rounds, you know, on them and told them they're the servants, we're the people. She didn't like that. Yeah, it didn't work out good, but I'm still going back against that. So I have to be careful what I do there, you know?
Right. Yeah, there's another way. You have to do it, again, when I put this book together, I'm going to relay some papers out how to approach these kind of situations, you know?
Well, yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, when I was in court and the sheriff told me to shut up 3 times, I told him I'll defend myself. The judge jumped off the bench and said, what'd you say? You know, I wasn't trying to be nasty. I'm just telling you, I'll defend myself.
They
that's what it is, you know?
They don't like when you challenge their authority, especially when they don't have it, you know?
Well, I told him, I said, listen, you called me here. This is a hearing. You're going to hear me. You're going to hear me. That's it. You call me here, you're going to hear me. Nothing on me. Can't prove a thing. She, you know. So I pull out the court transcripts when she tried to lie, and I, and she didn't like it. She says, this is my court. How'd you get it? I said, well, this is my paper. I have a right to this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I will go talk to the sheriff. You know, I have talked to him before about things. So.
Yeah, go talk to the sheriff. That's the way you should really start. Look at the notice of demand. Consider that. And we'll just take it from there, you know?
Even with sheriff, what can he do if I can't show what they're doing or who's doing it? How do I, you know?
Well, at least get the vehicle off the property. You can begin there with that. The other
right.
thing, of course, well, again, I think cameras is the way to go.
Well, at first I was towing the vehicle off the property. That's what I talked to. I was going to tow it off, but then I thought to myself, you know what? They put it here. It's not registered. Let them fight to get it off now. That's what I figured. I was going to seize the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
There's two RVs.
Before you even do any of those things, I'd go talk to the sheriff and tell him what you're thinking of doing or what your options are, and let him see if he can give you some options and then make a decision. And make
all
sure
right.
he's supporting you. That's the key here. You need the support.
Very good advice. I didn't think about that, but you are absolutely right. I agree with you. Thank you. Very good. Very good. I'll get back to you on this and let you know how that comes along. Thank you, John. Right.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we got Ross. Go ahead, Ross.
You think that was a bad idea for South Dakota and other states, 18 states that did a resolution to cut the conventions of states?
Yes, you don't want a convention of states. Not in today's environment.
Like South Dakota, the South Dakota did a resolution to specifically put tournaments in on that. I know. I know why they do that.
The enemy, to some degree, is looking for a convention of states so that they can get their paws onto the Constitution. The environment today, the political environment, and all the criminality going on with all these people and all these agencies, it's no time to be really opening that kind of a thing up where they can stick their fingers in there. And the biggest problem is that most of the people, especially the people that be participating, are very much doubtful that they know and understand the Constitution and who we are as a people and what the common law is and what our heritage is, and they don't understand these things. I mean, look at even, you know, the United States Supreme Court, I've heard justices say and call us a democracy. Now, that's how far off we are. The last thing we need is a con. We do not need a con. And that's why we have to support, and NLA supports, and we hope all of the committees of safety, as they become knowledgeable of this, that they too support the Republic Review, because that's the only way at this point we can fix the problem. Before we want to even think about, we don't need to tinker around with the Constitution. Let's get rid of all of the unlawful laws that are on the books. Let's get rid of all that. Let's clean it up, and let's apply the Constitution. And let's put these people's, you know, their foot to the fire here and make sure that they uphold their oaths when they take these offices, you know, whether it's a congressman or a senator or whatever. And let's support the Constitution. Then we can think. I think then we're going to find out we don't need the con.
I think also the problem with that is also what someone in my family said, that, we just need to elect the right people into the office to fix the problem.
Well, no, it's even simpler than that. We can have, 530 people in Congress, including the Senate? Is that what it is, Gerard? Do you remember? 530?
I think it was 535, but close
enough.
Okay.
So let's say 530, 535. We can have 535 Hitlers in power. as long as the people are in control and they can't do any damage. Look, it's the people's fault to a large degree. Unfortunately, we've been captured since our birth, and we've been built narrative upon narrative upon narrative, and we've come to believe narratives are the facts. So when you make an argument with someone, they bring up all these positions and stuff, but it's all narratives that they're arguing, narratives that are created by the enemy. So we have to really take control ourselves, the people. If we got committees of safety and the people are holding the elected individuals within their political subdivisions, whatever it is, whether it's a town, a village, a county, a state, the governor for a state, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If we're controlling our political politicians, if we turn them into statesmen, hopefully, but if we're controlling them through the committees of safety, they can't do anything. Okay, because we'll yank them out of office, we'll do recalls, or we'll indict them, or do whatever has to be done. But it is true, we do want statesmen, we do want to get good people who are going to be honest and get out there, do the job, and have a heart in the job as a patriot to do the job that they're doing, not seeking power and authority and so on. So, again, it starts with the people. We got to fix ourselves first, and then, and only then, can we fix our government.
I think the problem is we were trained and conditioned by the education system we have right now.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the educational people. Committee, by the way, Ross, the educational committee within all these committees of safety, that's where their power and authority is. That's what they need to be doing, is making sure these schools have a proper education. And that's something NLA is going to be getting a lot more involved with in the coming future. Hopefully, well, we got a lot of work to finish before we enter to that one. But
so we also have to deal with the school district boards, and also the school education board of the state too, because they're the ones who control the education process.
Right, and they shouldn't be. Okay, they shouldn't be. The people on the local level should be controlling the educational process. The people, we all know that everybody needs the basic, you need your mathematics, your real history, though. If you're going to teach history, it's got to be real history. You know, we really got to get involved to make sure proper history is being taught in our schools. But other than the basics, it's up to the people in the local community to think, it's their children going to the schools in their local communities, what's important to them. And that's where things really will start to get competitive, because one district might be much more better than another in the sense of what they're putting out, the children coming out and how they're getting educated, and that creates competition. And what President Trump wanted to do, and lots of other people came up with this before, but it never really made it to the stage of argument here, debate. But Trump has brought it up, is let the money follow the children. Let's not just keep pouring money into these state schools for every child. Last I heard, and this goes back a while, it was like $19,000 a year for each child in school. And this goes back years. So I have no idea what it is today with inflation. It could be 25 or 30. Just think what that kind of money could do in a private school. Most decent private schools don't even cost anywhere near that kind of money. Okay, so that money should follow the child, and state schools would eventually fall away. They'd be bought, the buildings and everything would be bought out by private people to create schools that will benefit the community, that the community would want to send their children to. So this is where we have to move education.
We the people in the community should be in charge of it, not local communities should be in control of it, not...
Yeah, and it makes all the sense in the world, Ross, when you think. It makes all the sense in the world when you think about it. Yeah. Look, we the people have to control our courts. We have to really come to understand that. We control the courts of law. We indict or we don't indict. We are the people that come in to decide innocence or guilt, and it's we the people. That individual sitting up there is not a judge. He's a magistrate. He just gets to sign the paper, this is the will of the jury, and put the seal on it and push it out for the order to the sheriff, whatever that might be. So we should be controlling our law. We should be controlling our political process through the committeemen, which we do the committees of safety. obviously we should be controlling our education. To think that the state is control of our education, that should frighten us to death. I mean, we're born thinking that they should be, you know, taking care of this, but we've lost our minds on this. But we've fallen to the narrative. We've fallen to the enemy. Look, if the state can't tell us what our children needs to learn, we, the people, must find out and realize what is important for our children to learn. And we need to. We can all agree on certain
yes.
things, you know, education on the Constitution, our heritage, on the civics, education, you know, of course, mathematics and English and real true American history. You know, we know the people have to decide, and they have to be involved.
I think that, yes, is the problem is right there is a lot of people believe in Don Dewey
mm-hmm.
is the one who's yep. the founder of the progressive education system.
Right, the Dewey system, yeah. I vaguely yes. remember that. I know the name and everything, and I'm trying to think, you know, but yeah, I'm familiar with the name. I don't have the details of... do you know how that process works, Gerard, the Dewey system?
I know the Dewey Decimal System.
No, something.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it probably is progressive education. I mean, we do know that our educational system is totally destroyed. Anybody that visits the schools today, look at computers. They should have one period a day where children come together to learn computers, maybe how to use a Microsoft, you know, Word processor, or how to use an Excel thing, how to get around the Internet.
They shouldn't do that until they learn how to read and write first.
Exactly. But every course, there should be a textbook. The children should come home with a textbook, and they should learn how to live out of a book, okay? Because the computer is a good tool, but you really need to know really how to read a book, okay? Because reading is the most important thing to your education. Read, 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 read. That's your key to education. but to run a computer in every one of these courses is destruction. What I've seen going on in school is just unbelievable. I mean, you know, they give them a page and they get them off. They can go out into the computer and pull them off the computer a page, and that would be the lesson for the day. There is no textbook. You can't look at the future. Parents have no idea what's being taught in school. And if you go there, if you visit the schools, and especially if you go at the wrong time, which for you should be the right time to really for them to be exposed, to see some of the demonstrations and things that these kids do right in the school building, which is anti-republic. It's a destruction to our republic. But people don't even know about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, thank my you. Mom is an educator, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mom is an educator, too.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably sees it that she has to just support what they teach. She can't go against it.
Right.
That's okay. because of the right. unions. But listen, John, if
yes, the union.
I don't know why they think that we need a constitutional convention, because if there's anything unconstitutional, we have plenty of Supreme Court rulings like Marbury versus Madison that says it's null and void. So we just got to declare it null and
only,
void.
Only the enemy wants a constitutional convention, and the people who are ignorant that believe the narratives, that believe the facts of their lives, the facts that run their whole life is just a series of narratives that they believe to be true, which is nothing but a bunch of lies.
Right.
That's the problem we have. So we have a lot of people who are just brain dead going along with the system, so it seems to be a lot of people that are involved that way, but you have the enemy really orchestrating this because they want to get their hands on our Constitution. They think that they have the power and the authority to go in there and to erase, like, maybe the Second Amendment and part of the First Amendment, you know, to create, what do they call it, free speech zones or something like that. I mean, these people are insane. They need to be in jail. As a matter of fact, there is U.S. codes that anybody who tried to tamper with that deserves to go to jail, and that's going to be part of the court case when we come back up against these people, particularly the bar, because the bar, the whole process of the bar, the whole educational process focus of the bar is to destroy the republic, and I can prove that on paper. We already have proven that on paper, but we'll make it more clearer.
Okay, let's move on because we're supposed to go 2 hours and I want to get everybody in here, so
okay.
We beat this subject to death. Okay, thank you, Ross.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Ross.
Yeah. Okay, we got California Fred, how you doing? Long time no hear.
Can you hear me, sir?
I can.
Am I too loud or anything?
No, you're good.
I just wanted to make sure we don't have an echo chamber.
No, you sound good.
My question was about these school boards, how they ignore the people. I've been watching that in disgust. And then this guy came up, and he was suing the school board's bond.
Right. We discussed that last week. That's a very good strategy.
Around in the next county over submitted.
Right.
Committees of safety. And, John, in your book, are you addressing the bonds and taking on these tyrants?
You know, I did not address the bonds, but, I am going to try to update my book, there's a chapter in there I want to change some things in it, and because things have changed since I've written it. But I never addressed the bonds, but that's a very good point, and I will try to address the bonds. And I'll address the bonds even in the book that I'm going to be writing now for the law.
And you know, the Edgar County watchdogs have very good strategies for this
right.
stuff, too.
Right.
You know, they serve them papers. They've gotten rid of, I think Francine said, 600 officials in the past, you know, whatever, however many years they've been in existence, a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of methodologies that do work. And it seems that people are starting to wake up now, so.
I would like to ask Fred a question. Fred, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I can.
Can you tell me what counties you're talking about in California, please?
They're not in California. I saw it on the Internet watching the X-22 report.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that's usually pretty good information on the X-22 report.
Right. It was either that or we know.
Yeah, and we know, yeah.
But the thing about the bonds... I can't overstate. Judges have bonds, too. You can go after their bonds.
Every elected individual has bonds. but
they're supposed to.
And appointed. But, yeah, they're supposed to. Here in New York, for instance, they put the weight onto the people, and the people don't even know it. And we're going to deal with that problem, too, because that is fraud.
Well, you go after the judge's bond, and you know what? You neuter them.
Well, the problem here in New York is when we were chasing that down some years back, we found out, we went down there, there's like, I forget how many judges there were. I think there's 8 of them that control the whole state, really. And they're all down in New York City. And what we found out when we were tracing the bonds, and they didn't want to answer these things, but finally they came up and told us that, well, look, the state backs the bonds. They're really, none of these people are actually going out getting bonds. The state is backing them. They're not paying nothing into it. And that means that you and I are paying the situation if something goes wrong. It's not like their bond can be pulled because we're just paying ourselves back. It's crazy, you know. It's just crazy.
Well, it defeats the purpose of a bond. It
yes, it doesn't do nothing, right? But where did they think they had the authority to do that, you know?
That was my question regarding the committees of safety and it seems to me that would upset the apple cart all across America.
Absolutely. The committees of safety, yeah, give them the knowledge of the bonds, and they go out and start pulling the bonds. Absolutely. That's a good point. We need to, Gerard, maybe you can try to help me work this out on the bonds. You know, write something up and put something together.
Excuse me.
We got to do a little more, research on that.
The sheriff is bonded, too. You can.
Everyone. That's elected is supposed to be bonded.
Right.
I mean, we're sitting here fighting in courts, and nobody's going to the private side in equity to take them on.
Right.
We're all dealing with it at law, where they control the scenario.
Well, at law is supposed to be common law. That's what at law means. in law, at law, or just the word law always identifies with common law. Positive law, statutes, you know, and codes, that's all equity.
Really? That's contract law?
No, no. Well, actually, not. Contract law can be. If you have a contract dispute, you can take that into an equity court and let a judge decide on the merit of the case and on the contract as it's executed. Okay, or you could take it into a court of law, which would mean a jury. A court of law requires a jury. Okay, but an equity court, you know, is a court where your contract becomes the equity part of the court, obviously, and it's what governs that particular court. You know, if you go into court on a situation, there's 57 codes, and you know, one this code or that code would apply to this case or that case. You know, it has its own necessary statutes and regulations and so on. Like the U.S. Post Office, there's codes and regulations specific for that agency. Even Congress has specific codes that focus in on Congress to control Congress and the president, the powers and the authorities of the president. There's a code on that. So when you go into a court, and you go into the equity side, that's why there's an appellate process. You know, you can appeal it up the line. In a court of law, there is no appeal. It's final. The decision is final. There's nothing to talk about no more, because the people decided. The people spoke, and the people are the sovereign, and the people and the sovereign makes the law.
Where in the codes does it stipulate that we, the people, are subjects of the government?
That's the point. We're not, you know, these codes have no authority. If you go into it, starts off, of course, on the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, where we've given them 18 powers. So the 18th power is to write the laws for all of the earlier powers within. And there are some other powers scattered through the Constitution that they've been given. But Congress particularly, the power to legislate is in Article 1, Section 8. So they can legislate everything that we've given them. And you're right, we have not given them any power or authority to legislate our behavior. So they can write no law. They can write no regulation. They can make no mandate to control any of the people. All those things apply to government agencies. When a governor goes out and puts out a mandate, you got to wear a mask, well, he's talking and can only talk to the people that is he's responsible for within his administration, or that would brings him to the agencies, because he's the governor of the state and the agencies. Okay, so he can control them, but he can't control we, the people. We don't have, but people, you see, therein is ignorance. If the people knew that, we would ignore this off. We'd never even gone as far as we're at. We'd tell them to go to hell and just continue living life, and they wouldn't be able to do anything. But we are ruled by narratives. That's the problem. And, of course, they control the narrative. They control the, you know, Facebook. They control all the news medias. They control it all. So we're a people driven by narratives. The truth is narratives. But what people don't know is they're living in a fiction of lies. And if only they understood, we wouldn't have any. If people understood that overnight, all our problems would be solved tomorrow.
Well, they're slaves, too, because mm-hmm. the governor kills the mask mandate, and they wear them anyway.
Well, I'm dealing with my sister's in a hospital, and I wanted to know about visiting hours. And they promptly informed me that I had to have proof of a vaccination.
Yeah, they're insane.
Now, where do you deal with these public policies by these corporations and companies?
The only way you're going to solve this problem, only one way you're going to solve this problem, get a committee of safety going in your county, get to be 150, 200 strong, get the sheriff on your side working together, discuss it with him, go into the hospital and do what you got to do. And nobody will get in your way, because they should be arrested if they try to prevent you from doing this. The only way you're going to get your rights back is to be respected is to get a committee of safety for the people to step up and take power and authority. That's the only. There is no other. I challenge anyone to give any other way to do this. There is no other way. That's it. And you have to have a good sheriff. And if you look at a lot of sheriffs, they may appear to be bad guys, but it's not necessarily that they're bad. They're just ignorant, and they don't know what to do. So they follow what the county attorney tells them to do. And so they're stuck in a situation. We're going to liberate them by educating them, getting them involved with the committees of safety. Again, the book plays an important role. That's why, you know, a campaign for constitutional sheriffs is so important. Anybody who hasn't given to that, please go online and give to your campaign to constitutional sheriffs. Let's get your sheriff a book, Government by Consent. Let's make sure they understand. And that's a necessary primer to starting a committee of safety. First order of business as you're organizing is get that book to your sheriff. And you do that by going online, and we'll send a book out. And like I said, Sheriff Darr, as an introduction letter, we have a letter. Now they're being primed, so your first meeting when you're coming up, which should be a short meeting, 5-10 minutes, just basically giving them a copy of your resolutions, a copy of your charter, put together in a nice way, and then set up another meet 30 days. With the entire group. So now if the sheriff hasn't looked at the book and read the book, he's definitely going to look at the charter, then he's going to look at the book, and he'll be primed for the meeting. He'll start to get it. Now, if the sheriff doesn't get it, then that's a whole different story, and we'll have discussions on that for sheriffs who buck the system, because we want to try to do everything we can to pull the sheriff back under the Constitution to be the constitutional sheriff, the guy that's going to protect the people. And if we can't do that, then we got to get rid of that sheriff. And then you got to let it be known, we're going to recall you. And you immediately start the recall process and get rid of that guy, because he's got to go. But first, let's pull him in, because most of them are just ignorant. I think a lot of them really want to do good work. There are some hardcore criminals, I'm sure, that are sheriffs. There's no getting away from that. But I don't think there's that many.
Well,
in a private property situation where you've got these care facilities with their policies, how do you challenge those policies directly?
There's no way they can refuse you access. You're talking about visiting someone in a hospital, right?
Well, you got to have a vaccine
proof. No. There's no way they can apply that to the people. That cannot be applied. The fact of the matter, there can no requirement for you to put something into your body that's begin with is experimental to begin with, okay? So forget that. That's not possible. But the bottom line is that person in the hospital has every right to have visitors as anyone else does, and for you being, refused is ridiculous. As a matter of fact, maybe they should be putting anybody who got the shot to stay out of the hospital, because they're the ones that got the problem.
We're on the same page there.
But they don't know that. Again, the narrative comes to play. They're living under the narratives. Okay, their facts are the narratives. They live by the narrative.
That was my question. What do you do with a private property situation and their policies?
You do a notice and demand, you sue them personally. Go back right
on. And more important than that, I mean, you could do that at the same time. More important than that, get a committee of safety going, educate your sheriff, and go take control. They can't stop you. They can't prevent you from, you're accessing a place that you have a right to get services from or to be part of, because visitation in a person in a hospital is also part of their recovery, because that gets into psychological, But they can't refuse to communicate, people to communicate and to care for their family. Look, I've already got this problem, and I'm considering a lawsuit very, very strongly, because my daughter could have died recently because of their refusal and their games with this stupid stuff. But I don't want to get into that at this moment anyway. So,
thank you very much for taking my questions, sir.
Okay, Fred. Thanks.
Okay, let's move on. We got less than 10 minutes, so let's see. We got Danny from Wisconsin is next. Go ahead, Danny.
Yeah, I was just going to direct this at California Fred. I think most definitely try to get a committee of safety going. We recently got some going in Wisconsin, and we've already put in a request to hire the Tioga County watchdogs to give us trainings. And we're going to do the same thing with the Wins for Bond people, the people you're talking about, with the surety bonds.
Right.
They both do trainings for free. And
but just with those two tools, you could take your freedom back.
Yeah, we need to look into that, Gerard. Wins for bonds.
Bonds for the win. Bonds for the win.
Bonds for the win.
Is that a website?
Yes, bondsforthewin.org, I believe.
Bonds.
So BONDSFORTHWINS.
I think there's no S. I could be wrong.
Okay, one or the other, either or. And we could try .com, .org, and so on.
Right. It's two ladies that have been doing it. They've had a lot of success with school districts so far that I know of in Illinois and Arizona. And they've had success simply sending a letter of intent to put a claim on the bond. And they're so afraid of somebody getting a claim on their bond, they've gotten a number of mask mandates removed and everything else. And they go to the top. They go after the superintendent and his bond.
Right.
Gerard, do you think you have time to do some good research on this and get a lot of stuff together on it?
Yeah, I'll see what I can get.
We really want to do, because I think this is important to really, this is a good tool to have, and we need to teach also the people that are building committees of safety about this and refer them also to this group. We should probably try to connect with them, to work with them.
Well, he said they give courses, didn't you, Dan?
I asked them. I was on a Zoom call with them that I got invited to by somebody else that's using them, and I asked if they would. I told them about our committees of safety, asked if they would do a training for us, and they would do so with a big Zoom training for however many people.
Well, if you make connection with the leadership, maybe you can connect them with us, and I'd like to have conversation with them.
Yeah,
that's great for me. I told Francine I'd do a bunch of research on it, and I'm just so, you know, I work full-time, I run my own business,
yeah,
I'm trying to get three communities off the ground, and I do want to do more research on it, but I just haven't had a ton of extra time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so booked up myself, but this is an important topic, so very important. Gerard, I'm hanging on to you for this.
don't hang too tight. No.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'll try and talk with them and see what I can.
If we can get a meet, that'd be really nice to have a conversation with these people. I'm going to definitely check their website out. I'm sure Gerard is too. And if you can make a connection with us, get us a name and a number, a contact or something, and we can have a meeting or something.
And if they do a Zoom training, heck, we could put it right on the website for people to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea.
Okay,
hey,
California Fred, don't forget to get a committee of safety going.
Yeah.
I yield.
I want to ask you, didn't Wisconsin just recall their votes? Vote to recall the votes? Was that Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, one of the representatives in Wisconsin made a motion to rescind the 10 electoral
right.
college votes given to Biden.
And it passed.
No, it didn't pass.
Oh, I thought it did.
No, it went to committee.
It'll never come out of committee.
Them.
Yep. They control the committees. That's the problem. And that is, I don't know how people can fall for that evil, where one person can control the entire Congress. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
So the head of the Rules Committee, which is the committee it went to, came out and publicly said there's no way he's going to ever let that out of committee onto the floor, and I don't know that he has the authority to do so, but Robin Voss, who's the RINO head of the assembly in our state, we have a Republican-controlled assembly, but when this assembly person did this, he went and pulled that assembly person's staff. Every assembly person gets one paid staff member. And so once he made that motion, the head of the assembly pulled his staff member also.
So he's aiding and abetting. He has to be arrested too then.
He should be.
Basically.
So you're going to go after both of their bonds, right, Danny?
There you go, Fred.
I mean, let's just do it fast. Just
yeah.
you know. Don't monkey around with it. Just go after both their bonds. And we'll move on.
I agree. I second that.
Yes.
I second that emotion.
Well,
good suggestion, Francine.
Okay. I'll talk to you later, Danny. Bye.
Yep. I yield.
We're after 11.
No, and it's piling up on you.
Yeah. I'll have to pull the plug. Let's see.
Why don't we try to do 1 minute or 2 minutes on each?
Yeah, just quick. Okay, what is that? I can't see that one. Talk, Taz. I got my glasses on. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks again.
Tizak, right?
Tizak.
Yeah,
Tizak. Oh, no. Tizak. Okay.
Yeah, thanks again for another great meeting. I wanted to make a quick correction about that website. It was not a .org, I believe. I think it's a .com.
.com. Yeah, that's the first one I was going to try anyway. So.
It's also plural, bonds. Bonds.
BONS.com.
And it's WIN is without the S on it, right? WIN.
Correct.
Okay.
So bonds, plural, for the WIN.
Got it.
Singular at the end. And incidentally, I was sent that same site by someone who, I think I mentioned she was being squeezed out of the medical field, and she tried to sue in the First Municipal District, which is the Daly Center, 50 West Washington in Chicago, Cook County. And she managed to garner an audience with a judge and a clerk who told her that they weren't going to hear her suit. So somewhere along the line, someone recommended, you know, that I might be able to help her. So she came across this site on her own. Yeah, and you have it up now, I think, for everyone to see during the meeting. And I haven't had time to look into it personally. I just have been kind of messaging her while we're in our meeting, letting her know that the site came up. It would be great if we can network with these people. I understand that they are in Illinois. I also mentioned, I think, in a previous meeting that I came across someone who had a committee of safety, at least by name, and I thought that they were in Colorado because they abbreviated county, CO. But when I learned that they were in, you know, just southwest of Cook County, basically a suburb of Chicago, well, it was great. And it turns out that we know mutual people. I reached out to this guy whose name is Andrew, or Andy is obviously his first name. And he gave me kind of his grassroots story of how this committee of safety started and how he has a couple hundred people now. And I told him a little bit about my background and what I understood a committee of safety to be, and a little bit about NLA and Bill Thornton, common law. And at the end of an hour-long conversation, he said he was interested. So, you know, I have a meeting coming up in the west suburbs of Chicago on February 19th. I might, you know, this is with a prepper group. It's going to be two groups kind of meeting together. One newly formed group kind of out of the wake of the Derek Brose activation tour when he came to the Chicagoland area in October. And since then, I've been kind of carrying a little bit of the torch with a couple of meetings. So, you know, like I mentioned, a little bit busy with other stuff, but I might be mentioning committees of safety at that event. Where it's
well, maybe you can try to connect them with us, and we can meet together maybe one evening on, you know, in our room here and have a conversation and see once how we can assist them in any way and work together.
Well, absolutely, and I think that this is fluid.
And the important thing, and we try to make this note as often as possible, this is truly, we are truly building true grassroots. There is no, we don't govern anyone, we don't tell anyone in the committees of safety what to do. All we're doing is being a facilitator for education, communication, and organization. That's it. And anybody needs our assistance or asks us for, you know, information, we'll give them everything we got, but it's up to them to do what they have to do on the grassroots level. And we want to encourage, okay, working together county to county and state to state, but it cannot be orchestrated from above. It's got to really all bubble up for agreements on the bottom. And let me give you just one quick example. I like to create a page and start listing certain things that we have to correct in this nation. And there's a lot of things we have to correct, and we have to do it from the grassroots level. Okay, one of the things, let me think if I can remember it, I was thinking that we, oh, let's take businesses, okay? There are lots of ways that a lot of these big businesses have gotten around this idea that they can create these monopolies and call it something else or have a mother company and control other companies underneath, and they get this monopoly going. One of the biggest things or the biggest problems is business. If you are doing business with someone, there has to be a phone number to be able to make contact with these people. I know I get so frustrated. Skype is a problem. You can't get a hold of anyone. Meetup is a problem. And these are big companies. They're making big money, and I know I'm paying them, and I have no access to get correction. They tell me to go send them an email, and you go back and forth for a year with emails to get your problem solved, which never works well anyway. But the thing is that we need to push forward legislation because it's their business, especially on the federal level in the state. It's their business to make sure to control the commercial activities and make sure they're doing right for the people. And so if they're doing business and you're paying for that business, they should be required to have a phone and man it, where actually a person actually answers. A lot of these places, they have these phony numbers and no one ever answers. You're on there forever. You just, until eventually it just disconnects on you. So those kind of things we have to think about, and we have to make changes and force Congress to make the necessary law to control this for us. But that's just one little issue. It's a little thing, but it's a frustrating thing and really is a big thing. It's really the people need to have more of a say about how these businesses are run.
I think that you bring up an excellent point, and I have been participating in recent meetings and kind of with this coming from a little bit of a lost direction with what community safety is. However, since then, within a few moments of doing a quick search on YouTube, right, a cursory search of what a community of safety is, I found two videos, only a few minutes long each, less than five probably, and there were a couple of key points that they mentioned which kind of lit the light bulb for me. And I want to throw these out to make sure that we're on the same page. And I know you just mentioned how NLA is supposed to facilitate communities of safety and they're supposed to come up at a grassroots level. And that's fine. Some of what they mentioned in the videos was that, of course, they were used during the American Revolution. And at the time, they were not for the faint of heart, right? These were forums where ideologies were kind of being thrown out. And these groups, right, from which you can have many subcommittees, basically endless subcommittees, right, if you can man them, among them can be a militia. So ideologically, and, sorry, I'm missing maybe the most important part. So this is grassroots parallel government, right? Parallel government.
Yes. So government by the people.
Well, so that was the light bulb for me, right? And if you can hash out ideals, right, that's great. So if we have,
and remember, just a note from something you just said, all committees, the people, members of the Committee of Safety is the militia. They're also the militia. Our founding fathers were all in the militia. They were all in the committees of safety. They were all involved.
That's a good point. And some of the logistics we could probably hash out another time. One thing that I did want to mention, now it's kind of escaping me right now, but I think the networking is important. At some point, I think ideals shall be maybe delved into a little bit more for NLA. And obviously the bigger NLA gets, the more things can be filled out or flushed out.
Right. Well, that's where the Committee of Correspondence comes in, because we need to be communicating with our counties next door, or even throughout our whole state, and then sometimes even in other states, and NLA could help orchestrate that and create a place or a page where a lot of ideas and concerns that we have to unify ourselves together in order to deal with it. So if we're going to push our congressman to do certain things in office, okay, on the federal level, let's say. Well, we need a page where we can list out all these different ideas that we have to correct and maybe suggestions on how to correct them. And then all the committees of safety that agree with that will then start pressing their congressmen to apply this and to get the necessary law written, the appropriate legislation in order to make the controls. For instance, what I was just talking about before, which these businesses don't have phone numbers. It drives me crazy, totally drives me crazy. But, we need to work together in a lot of ways, but in a lot of, most of the work of the committees of safety is just within their local governments, self problems and situations and taking control, whether it be a village, a government, or the county or whatever, you know.
So you reminded me, and thank you very much. And this was kind of what made sense to me, right? And if you take NLA, you know, it might not be too inaccurate to kind of, you know, call us a lot of kind of law nerds, right? So we have this group that might know, at least in some collective sense, how due process works, how to hold court, how to have common law grand juries, and how to move that kind of legal ball, right? So if that exists, and there is also an actual substantial militia, then can we not move the political landscape without appealing to corrupt politicians? Can we not give them due notice to...
It's called nullification, and Jefferson spoke about this always, constantly. He moves the point. Nullification was the solution. But in order to nullify, you have to have an educated people. And that's why Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never, ever will be. Okay? So we have to be educated. Once we're educated and we come together in order to organize ourselves, in order to have that government by consent, that's where we can execute the nullification there. Because nullification by the populace, it'll shut them down every day. Okay? We don't have to do much more than to serve notice and let it be known.
Their trespasses.
Huh?
Right? Like, if a burglar comes into your home and takes your TV... Mm-hmm. It's sure, there's merit in getting your TV back, but at what point are they going to be held accountable for their trespasses and not let that be to their own discretion?
Well, again, that's where the law comes in. That's where the people must decide what they want to do. And again, that's why it belongs to the people. Okay? The
right.
People,
and this
not,
is why I'm saying, I don't think we need to appeal to politicians. If we can...
No, but we can require them. We could require politicians to make the proper law and control over themselves. Remember, legislation is to control themselves. Legislation is to control all of the different government agencies. That's what it's for. And all of the bureaucrats within those agencies, all the agents within those agencies, they have to be controlled by regulations, statutes, codes, process and procedure.
They should also be held accountable to the law.
Absolutely, and inside that you do find the accountability requirement. And look at, once it becomes criminal, then the people apply the law as they see it. You know, the law is common sense. Common law is common sense. It's truths, undeniable truth, truths that cannot be denied, okay? The idea water cannot run uphill. You can't argue with that. All men are created equal. No man in their right mind can argue with that. Okay, you just can't argue with it. Truth is really, common law is really just truth. It is a series of truth, one upon another. You know, like law is construction, well, so is common law. Common law is a construction of truth. Okay, there are eight principles of truth that Jefferson used in order to write the Declaration of Independence, and it spills right into the preamble of the Constitution. The preamble of the Constitution is just an amazing document of truth, and it applies all of the eight principles that Jefferson used to write the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration of Independence, of course, is the foundation of our law. It places the law, it places our courts and everything under God, okay? You know, we're under His law. So when people have given up, not that they've done this on purpose, but they have given up ultimately, whether they realize it or not, they've given up the truth to narrative. And narrative is just control by the enemy to destroy liberty and to destroy our republic. And that's why people are confused. We've lost our common sense because people are so confused, okay? That's why we have to teach the truth. So. Anyway, back to you.
Okay, I'm going to take one more. You got 1 minute, Jim, and then we're done. We're already over, 15 minutes over, so. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, Jim in Pennsylvania. Very quick points. Did NLA know about the doctor vaccine protest rally in D.C. last Monday?
Yeah, I heard about it, yep.
Yeah, I just wish I would have known. I would have liked to have been down there, but I found out after the fact.
Well, you're going to see a lot more of that. That's really up and coming. They're really starting to get very vocal. They're getting, you know, it used to be if a doctor opened his mouth that he was done. You know, they take their licenses and all stuff. But now they're banding together, and they have some clout. And I think that you're going to find the other side's getting worried. They're starting to back off a little bit because they see that they're going to be held accountable for all this crap that they pulled, you know. So, you know, I don't know if you, I don't know if it was part of that or one of the other groups where they went into the, I think it was the federal government that keeps track of all the, they have their own bear system, and they found out that 4% of the shots were given 90% of the problems through batch numbers. So that's gonna really snowball here in a little bit, in a few days, a few weeks. So, which proves that it's a pandemic of the vaccinated, not the unvaccinated, which is the lie that they're putting out there. So it's gonna be exciting. I think you're gonna see a lot of stuff. And look, we have to support these guys to step up to the plate and stick their necks on the line, because that's exactly what they're doing. You know.
What can we do to help them?
Well, look, at the education that we're giving will help. The fact that we could teach them, if what we need to do is connect with them and have them look at what we have, because maybe they should be going after their bonds. There's other things that they can be doing more proactively amongst themselves. I mean, just the fact that they get up and they make these claims, and they're putting their life and their education and their credentials on the line, you know, so we have to support them. I mean, sometimes they get kicked out of hospitals and things like that, but they're able to open up a private practice. We should support them in anything like that, you know. I think you're going to see a lot of stuff in the next couple of months that are going to be very good in regards to this whole issue. So, but, to get their message out is very important. So, like, sharing their videos is important, because the mainstream media will not do it. So if everybody can grab a video and post it someplace, you know, and I don't care if you put it on Facebook or YouTube, because they're usually up there for a little while before they catch them and take them down. And then if somebody else puts it up, you know, it defeats the purpose of their censorship, you know. So, anyway, I don't know what else to tell you. But
how about a private website? Would they be able to do anything with that?
They could. Look, at Ollie has created Video Sanctuary, and that's where we put these videos that you won't even find them if you Google them. You know, because they've been taken off, they've been censored. So, videosanctuary.com and Q17 News. We're putting a collection of all these different videos, and John's been putting some of them on our website. There's a page there of these different videos that you can't get anywhere else. And probably what we'll do is we'll start rotating them in and out, you know. That way it's not always the same ones. But that's something we need to discuss.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm out of that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, I want to let you know the Edgar County Watchdogs are going to be in Pittsburgh this Saturday.
Right, right.
So I just want to let everybody know about that. And yeah. One last thing, and I'm going to yield. John, I want to apologize. Our Committee of Safety was supposed to talk with you several Tuesdays ago, and okay. We had a new member and a change in our physical location where we were going to meet. So we had a little bit of problem, so I just want to apologize for that, why we did not connect with you that night.
I've been busy anyway. But look, at any time you want to get to meet, you know, we can do this. I'd like to say focus in on a Tuesday if that's possible, but I'll accommodate anything that's necessary in order to have a meeting. But, you know, we can meet in our room like this. I'd like to do Tuesday, any Tuesday at 7:15, and if we got to go longer than an hour, we'll go longer than an hour. And again, anybody that needs to discuss anything in detail that maybe, you know, it needs to be announced on a Monday night program before that meeting, if we do it on a Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever. And this way other people can come in and listen in and get educated and informed. But, yeah,
it sounds like a great policy. Yeah, okay, anytime. Listen, I'm going to yield. I'm going to let you go.
Thank you, and this was a good meeting.
Before you close down, though, I'm looking at this bond site. This is they've got everything laid out pretty step by step. I mean, this looks pretty good. I would try to correct one of the things. They got these surety bonds into going, for instance, to go after state by state, the letter. I don't think the letter is required. This is a letter of California school boards, okay? But if we go here to the, let me get back to the bond request letters. They don't have all the states up here anyway. But we can use the federal because the federal law applies to it all the way around. I mean, the federal code. But I think what they're trying to do is also give the codes in the different states, and they found them in numerous states, but apparently not all the states. But we should try to get some more research going and get the other, codes or statutes within the states that apply to these bond requirements also, if possible. I definitely would like to meet with these people, so whatever kind of a meeting could be set up, I'm definitely, definitely interested. I'd like to really work with them and enhance and work with their letters and their papers and everything. It looked pretty well organized here. Step-by-step guide, I was going through that. It looks pretty good,
Well, we'll give them your NOA card with our leader on, our chairperson from our county.
Okay.
So we'll get the word out to them on Saturday.
Right. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Good night.
And see you here, same time, same station next week. Have a good night. God bless everybody.